from Altoona to Lafayette Hill, Phillipsburg to Whitehall, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania has one of the highest corporate net income taxes in the nation. That is a barrier to business expansion and new job creation. David Taylor is joined by Stephen Bloom and Brandon Van Dyke of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capital Watch discussion. And concerns over the integrity of the 2020 election and fear of problems again this year continue to fester among a significant segment of the electorate, and no effort at reform has been successful. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Former President Donald Trump weighed in on Pennsylvania's statewide races in a big way this past week. First, during a rally in North Carolina, he endorsed Dr. Mehmet Oz in the U.S. Senate Republican primary. Dr. Oz has been locked in a statistical tie with former hedge fund manager David McCormick for the lead in that race. In an odd turn of events, State Senate President Pro Tem Jake Corman announced he was exiting the GOP race for governor and was seeking to have his name removed from the May primary ballot. But then Corman talked with President Trump, who encouraged him to remain in the race, so Corman decided not to suspend his campaign. A total of 9 candidates are vying for the Republican gubernatorial nomination. In response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives this past week passed a package of legislation that would expand Pennsylvania's energy production to counter the geopolitical influence of Russian oil and natural gas. House Majority Leader Kerry Benninghoff said, quote, "Pennsylvania has the ability and the resources to invest in freedom by contributing to American-led energy independence for ourselves and our allies by increasing natural gas production and transmission capabilities to help end Russia's dominance in Europe and other parts of the world," end quote. According to the Center Square, passage of the legislation comes on the heels of the Biden administration entering into an agreement with European leaders to significantly increase domestic natural gas exports to those countries. It didn't work the first time or the second time, but the city of Philadelphia has reimposed an indoor mask mandate for indoor public spaces. COVID-19 cases have ticked up in recent weeks, although there appears to be little other data to justify the move. Philadelphia is so far the only city in the nation to reimpose a mask mandate. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. One of the factors businesses look at when deciding whether to locate or expand in a state is the corporate net income tax. With one of the highest such taxes in the nation, that alone makes Penns Woods uncompetitive, causing us to lose out on the jobs associated with business expansion. Here to talk about efforts to change that is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom and Brandon Van Dyke of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the program this time around, my pal Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here, David.
Well, your sidekick today, your teammate there from CF, senior policy analyst Brandon Van Dyke. Brandon, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So there was a lot of foolishness going on at the Capitol, as per the usual. The Governor Wolf is trying to pretend that he's in favor of the productive sector, and it all sounds nice. The unfortunate part is that when you know the details, it all kind of falls apart. So the governor says that Pennsylvania's 9.99 corporate net income tax is too high, which, of course, is true. But what the governor is saying in terms of reducing it is badly misleading, because while he's willing to lower the rate, he wants to tinker with a bunch of stuff behind how the tax is calculated that will actually make it as bad or worse, one of those things being giving even more discretionary power to the Department of Revenue. And from the employer community, that's just not acceptable.
And Governor Wolf has attempted to, in many cases, especially lately toward the end of his final year in office, to portray himself as something of a champion for the taxpayer, which is ironic in that he proposed literally the record highest increase in taxes ever in Pennsylvania history. He has, I think, 26 different times proposed tax increases, most of which were stopped. But you know, this is a governor who has embraced taxes. But now he's been talking about the need to reform and reduce Pennsylvania's corporate net income tax. And it, again, on its surface, it's a good sign. But when you get behind Governor Wolf's typical proposals, he has added these onerous accounting requirements every time that actually would make Pennsylvania less friendly toward business and investment than it currently is, rather than actually fix the situation. But what's good politically is by him talking about it so much, it has stimulated additional, I believe, political interest from folks who are in powerful positions in both the House and the Senate of Pennsylvania and who are serious about doing real corporate net income tax return in a way that doesn't actually secretly punish the businesses and industries that would be affected, but actually just makes Pennsylvania more competitive so that more job creators can create operations here in Pennsylvania and not start from behind with the nation's either highest or second highest, depending on how you calculate it, corporate net income tax.
Yeah, I mean, there are real reasons why we need to do this. And I think it's important, you know, once again, to point out the difference between tax rates and tax collections, because having this very high rate, it causes, you know, not just sticker shock, but it also, you know, Steve, as you suggested, it drives investment away. As a result, we have less business activity to be taxed, and that while, you know, reducing the rate in the very near short term might reduce collections, probably would reduce collections, that it would give us the runway to achieve takeoff with the economy that would lead to a broadening, of the economy, which in turn, in time, would yield greater returns. And so, you know, this isn't, you know, we're not talking about any kind of a giveaway. We're talking about something that has really been bad for Pennsylvania's economic growth and, you know, our long-term trajectory, and that, you know, we've got to grapple with these things if we're going to get to where we want to be, which is an economy that is growing, that is creating opportunities for employment, that is keeping our next generation of Pennsylvanians here at home rather than going off, you know, to build lives and futures elsewhere.
Pennsylvania's corporate tax rate, or CNIT, at present is 10%, which is the second highest in the country. We're second only to New Jersey.
It's not a good place to be.
The positive side of Wolf's proposal is that it would lower that significantly. But as you say, the devil is in the details. And that's why I think that the Commonwealth Foundation were much more positive about Senator Ryan Almond's bill, Senate Bill 771, that would lower the rate without a lot of this additional detail that would actually end up biting Pennsylvania in the back.
And I want to get to Senator Ament's plan here in just a moment. And Steve, I'll throw it to you in just a second. But there are also things that we need to do, Pennsylvania needs to do, to improve, not just to lower the rate, but there are other things in tax law that make us a bad place for investment. And one of those things is that we limit the ability of businesses to apply their business losses to their current and near future tax liability. It's called net operating loss carry forward. That's the technical term, but it's necessary, you know, for businesses that don't earn a profit in nice, tidy 12-month chunks. And under the IRS code and tax law in, gosh, more than 45 states, that businesses are allowed to take the fullness of that loss and apply it, again, to your current and near future tax liability. Pennsylvania is one of the only states that limits that. And we have it capped less than half. And, you know, that sort of intensifies that very high CNI rate. So there are a lot of things that we need to do to set things right, but certainly the very high rate and the sticker shock has got to be tackled because it's such an obvious, glaring shortcoming. Steve?
And nothing is a slam dunk in Pennsylvania politics, but I wanted to mention about the Ahmed bill that you were discussing.
Yes.
That it is, in fact, a bill that the legislative leaders are paying a lot of attention to. It's actually moving forward in the legislative process at a good clip. There's every expectation that both the House and Senate will have opportunities to vote on that bill and potentially put it on Governor Wolf's desk, or at least put it in a position that the contents of it will be included in the budgetary process that will be concluded on June 30th of this year, as a component of the budget negotiation with Governor Wolf. So the ground is being laid for an actual good quality CNI reduction bill to be part of the discussion around the budget just in a few short, really a couple of months from now, that could transform Pennsylvania's position and take us out of that dreadful spot of being the only state worse than us is New Jersey and put us in a place where we're actually competitive and we're not losing businesses every day even neighboring states like Ohio and West Virginia, or states farther away that have more favorable tax structures like North Carolina and Arizona and states all across the Sun Belt.
That's right. And it should be added that if Element's bill passes, and I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but I think it would lower the corporate tax rate by 1 percentage point every year until it hits 6.99. And then if revenue meets the IFO's projections, it will continue to decrease. But if that happens and we get it down to 6 or 5, that will make Pennsylvania nationally competitive with respect to its corporate tax rate.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom and Brandon Van Dyke from the Commonwealth Foundation. So, it is exciting that Senator Ahmed's bill has momentum behind it. Senator Ahmed from Lancaster County himself is a member of the Senate majority leadership. But I do think that they're looking to position this to be part of the final budget negotiations. Of course, end of the fiscal year is June 30. And because of federal dollars from the pandemic relief and so on, that the coffers are full. Of course, this is a very temporary moment in time, that the long-term trends for Pennsylvania and our budget, we have a structural deficit. 85 and up is the fastest growing demographic. And of course, seniors in those years require more public services. They're, no longer, paying taxes on income, so on and so forth. So, we have some real serious challenges that are coming over the horizon once those dollars are spent. But, using this moment in time to actually pivot the trajectory of the burden on the economy. And again, it's about the high rate suffocating growth. We want the economy to grow so that in the end we will be yielding greater tax revenues from a strong, robust, growing economy with low, stable rates of taxation.
At the very beginning of any tax cut, there is likely going to be an initial loss of revenue simply because the rate drops, but businesses and individuals haven't had a chance to respond to the new environment with the lower tax rate. And so the first thing that skeptics of tax reduction will look at is, well, you're going to, this is going to have a quote unquote cost to it if you reduce taxes. In fact, there will be a short term decline in revenue, but it's not as simple as that. Because if you look at it through dynamic modeling, which accounts for going out into the future and anticipating the behavior that we've seen over and over again that occurs in response to lower tax rates, is more business activity will then occur. It stimulates investment and activity, and ultimately the net overall increase in revenues will greatly overcome any short-term loss at the very beginning of the process. But because of Pennsylvania's unique situation heading into this budget cycle, that because of the various federal dollars that flowed into Pennsylvania, there are actually dollars sitting there that can be used to offset that initial loss. So there's no immediate budgetary impact. and we can set the stage for that long-term dynamic growth that ultimately will reduce, result in an increased revenue flow to the state, not because tax rates are higher, but because business activity is greater.
And fortunately, the Independent Fiscal Office has been empowered to actually deploy dynamic scoring to factor in how behavior will be changed by improvements in tax competitiveness, and that will, rather than having to deadlift, that initial cost reduction and just assume, well, you'll collect that much less over time, that they can factor in, you know, and recognize that there will be improvements to business investment and performance, and that and it'll reduce that overall price tag that, as you say, people are concerned about up front.
Yeah, and Steve made a great point there that we have a cushion right now because of all the federal dollars that have been pouring into Pennsylvania due to COVID. In the long term, lower tax rates stimulate investment, stimulate business creation, and actually lead to the creation of long-term or permanent jobs. Like, a lot of Democrats seem to think that the government creates jobs either by putting money in people's hands or maybe subsidizing certain businesses. But the way to create permanent jobs is to lower tax rates, to lower regulation, to make it more appealing and possible for people to start businesses that will then last decades and generations in Pennsylvania. And, there's a reason why so many entrepreneurs have been moving to Texas and Florida in the last few years. And we should try to ride that wind.
Yeah, and it's about making conditions to optimize growth in terms of the regulatory burden. Nobody's saying that there shouldn't be rules. Of course, there should be rules. But those rules should make sense, that they should be based on sound science, right, that they should be worth the costs that are imposed on the economy. And that's the sort of stuff. And it's the same with the tax burden. That when the tax burden is excessive, it suffocates growth. If you can dial back the tax burden to the correct point where you're no longer inhibiting growth, that's when, again, that people will choose to locate, invest, hire, and expand here in the Commonwealth, that conditions are suitable for taking those kinds of risks. And as a result, you know, that you will have that, that accrual of capital, that productive activity that results from building factories and starting, you know, stores and restaurants and all of those different things that happen in the productive sector, in the private economy. And that it's not only that we want more of that, we need more of that, you know, and I think that
we need it because
yes,
Pennsylvania
please.
Is not California. It's not New York. It's not even Maryland. So we need to make ourselves competitive in another way. And this is a very good way to do so.
And we deserve it. Our people deserve it.
Often among the political leadership that somehow just people are going to come to Pennsylvania no matter what, no matter how onerous the conditions are, no matter how burdensome the regulatory structures are, no matter how high the tax rates are, how frustrating the policies are. But the reality is, you know, capital is mobile. Capital will go where it can get the highest return.
Yep.
And it's not interested in being in Pennsylvania. It's interested in being in a place where it can earn a reasonable return, a rate of return, so that it can continue to create and sell products and services that meet society's needs and make people's lives better. But they don't do it out of a sense of, I want to be in a certain state. They do it out of a sense of, where do I have the matchup of the resources I need to create a business that's sustainable? And part of that is the tax and regulatory structure in the place I'm considering, is it favorable to me being able to compete with others who are doing what I do in other states?
Yeah.
And so we've got to look at that. And David, I wanted to ask you a question.
Yes,
if you don't
please.
Mind. I know you are... Again, you're representing the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. You have hundreds of members or thousands of members who are making things in Pennsylvania, but they, I'm sure, don't just make things in Pennsylvania, and I'm sure they've considered some of these issues. I'd be curious to know, you know, what's it like from the entrepreneur's perspective on these kind of issues?
Well, I mean, Pennsylvania has a dangerously low business startup rate. And that should be a warning sign for all of our policymakers and decision makers in state government, because it shows that people in general aren't willing to take the risk of starting a new venture in Pennsylvania. And obviously, in a free society with a free economy, all of these economic decisions are voluntary. And that, yes, working, you know, with my peers, with the other state manufacturing associations around the country, you know, I experience, or at least I get to see in a much more vivid kind of way, exactly what that difference in competitiveness means. And, you know, you see a high performing state like Utah, or even, you know, really competitive neighbor states like Ohio or Indiana or North Carolina. And, you know, the prosperity can come. And I just, you know, the problem with Pennsylvania is that, you know, we're very provincial, let's face it. And that even when, you know, Pennsylvania makes progress relative to where we have been, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're making net progress, because the world doesn't stand still. And a lot of places we've, you know, that they've long ago solved or never even had a problem that we're just dealing with right now, you know, trying to fix, trying to make Pennsylvania more competitive. So, and yeah, investment goes to where it's wanted. And there are lots of stories to tell about the comparative ease versus difficulty of starting a business, engaging in an industrial activity in a neighbor state or competitor state versus Pennsylvania. And it's, you know, I could go on and on about that. I wish we had more time. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much for taking time to be with me on the program to talk about this important subject. And where can people go online to learn more about you, Freedom Fighters?
The CommonwealthFoundation.org is our website.
Outstanding. Steve Bloom, Vice President, and Brandon Van Dyke, Senior Policy Analyst for the Commonwealth Foundation. Gentlemen, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, David.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. For Steve and Brandon and me, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Pennsylvania voters are just weeks away from a primary election that will select candidates to vie for an open U.S. Senate seat that could determine the balance of power in that chamber. For the first time since 1958, voters simultaneously will pick nominees for an open seat for governor. This will occur while concerns over the integrity of the 2020 presidential election continue to linger, amid fears this November's balloting will likewise be compromised. The left, along with a complicit legacy media, arrogantly dismiss these concerns as the big lie. But their efforts at a cover-up have failed to allay the fears percolating through a significant swath of the electorate. A legitimate election winner would be expected to take every step possible to validate their win. The opposite occurred in the aftermath of the 2020 elections, with Democrats fighting to block every effort to ensure ballots were fairly tabulated, while the legacy media demonized those seeking clarity. The annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the largest gathering of conservative activists each year in Penn's Woods, and this year's event was no exception. A capacity crowd jammed into the Penn Harris Hotel in suburban Harrisburg for a two-day program, including forums in which all nine candidates for governor and six of the seven U.S. Senate candidates participated. A straw poll asked attendees what they view as the most important issue facing lawmakers in Pennsylvania. An overwhelming 61% cited election integrity. 86% of the attendees support the automatic audit of every election, regardless of the result. A pre-conference Pennsylvania Election Integrity Summit, sponsored by the Conservative Partnership Institute, attracted a standing-room-only crowd that spent an entire day learning how to ensure future elections are conducted fairly. The left and its apologists in the legacy media are missing something important. This is not about overturning the results of the 2020 presidential election. It is about ensuring that future elections are conducted in a manner that ends in having the entire electorate having confidence in the validity of the balloting. Clearly, a wide swath of the electorate currently lacks that confidence. This is also not about stuffed ballot boxes or voting machine software chicanery. Here in Pennsylvania, destruction of voter confidence in the fairness of the election can be laid at the feet of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and the Wolf administration's failure to provide clear and consistently applied rules to conduct the election. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is currently ruled by an activist state Supreme Court controlled by Democratic justices who did everything possible to tilt the 2020 playing field to Joe Biden. A single ruling, the tossing of the Green Party presidential candidate off the ballot, resulted in the redirection of tens of thousands of voters into the Democratic column. Consider, the Green Party's candidate for state treasurer was allowed to remain on the ballot and drew 81,981 votes. The Green Party's candidate for Auditor General won 78,588 votes. Joe Biden carried Pennsylvania by 80,555 votes. It is safe to assume those Green Party voters, lacking their own candidate, ended up in the Biden column. The High Court's unconstitutional usurpation of the legislature's power to make election law by extending the period for ballots to be received by election bureaus, allowing ballots lacking a timestamp to be counted, and permitting the use of unsecured drop boxes created election chaos. That confusion was further aggravated by the Department of State's inconsistent application of the rules among the counties, to the point they even allowed private left-wing funders to contribute to official election bureaus in heavily Democratic counties. Despite the efforts of legislative Republicans, virtually nothing has changed over the past year to give voters confidence in this year's election. The House State Government Committee, under the chairmanship of Representative Seth Grove, conducted numerous hearings and produced election reform legislation. The bill was vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf, who objected to the inclusion of a voter photo ID requirement. A reform poll show is supported by the overwhelming majority of voters in both parties. Wolf has sent mixed signals relative to what he finds acceptable and has refused to negotiate in good faith with lawmakers in an effort to develop an acceptable reform measure. The state Senate is now taking up a series of single-issue bills, such as the outlawing of drop boxes, in the hopes of enacting some reforms. In a constitutional republic such as ours, it is vital that the electorate have confidence in the integrity of our elections. It is clear that confidence is lacking, and the time has come to stop sweeping those concerns under the proverbial rug and take the steps necessary to reform the system. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WLSW-FM and WQTA-AM in Connellsville, along with WFRM-AM in Countersport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.